If you're not listening to the Smoke World Podcast, you're wasting your time, you mortal. What's up, folks? Welcome to another episode of Smoke World. I'm your host, Stone. So go grab that stick, go grab a glass, whatever you're drinking. Let's sit back and have that conversation. You can follow me on Instagram at Smoke World Podcast and the email stone@smokeworldpodcast.com. The website, people. The website is doing excellent. If you didn't know, the swag is there. There's a swag tag. That's right. What is swag? What? Okay, I'll wait. You know. The swag tag there. Smoke World Podcast swag is now here. So go check out the website, smokeworldpodcast.com. Got some great sponsors. Go check the sponsors out. Go support the sponsors. This episode, people, are you listening? Is my man, the legend, the smooth lover, there is no other type of brother, Pedro Gomez from Drew Estates. He sits down, we share some information, but he gives a backstory about himself, where he came from, humble beginnings. It's an excellent podcast. He gets into a lot of, you know, again, you folks see the glory. He's out there. He's looking real smooth and debonair. Where is that? Whatever. You know what I'm saying? Mind your business. Real smooth. But he actually gets into his lifestyle, how he grew up, what he had to do to get where he's at. We talk a little cigars, obviously. Again, the smoke world, so we do all that. But nonetheless, sit back, enjoy, and I'll check you out on the other side. Brother Pedro, thank you for being a guest on Smoke World. How you feeling, brother? What's happening?
Man, everything's going good, brother. Smoking yep. A cigar, enjoying a beautiful afternoon right here in Miami. That's where I'm right now. Good weather. And this is going to be a great show. So I just can't wait.
Absolutely, brother. Well, I got you on the phone, brother. I want to say congratulations to you on gaining U.S. citizenship, brother. So that's what's up. Congratulations there, brother. Now we can run these streets, man. Now we can act a fool out here. We can really go out and act a fool, brother.
No, thank you so very much, man. I truly appreciate your gesture, and God is good, bro.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely, brother. So that just brings me to a segue to go to, let's talk about where you're from.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was born and raised in Estelí, Nicaragua. So that's my birthplace.
Okay, Estelí.
Estelí, that's right. The city that is known for tobacco, the city that is known for cigars, the city that a lot of people in the cigar community knows about. Few people have the opportunity to go there on a vacation or maybe a cigar trip. So people that knows about cigar, they do know about Estelí.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Now, let me ask you a question here, brother. Were you into the cigar thing as a kid, a young man? Was you introduced to the cigar back then?
Me growing up in Estelí, I knew that there were some factories, not as many as we have right now, but back in those days, I remember those factories, you know, people were, where you see a lot of bicycles, everybody in town knew that it was a cigar factory. So before I entered into the cigar world, I was a apprentice learning how to make saddles for horses. And I spent making saddles maybe close to 9 to 10 years.
Okay, making saddles.
Not
okay.
9 years.
Okay, hold on a second. That's pretty saddles. Interesting, bro. Okay, so what's that process like? Okay, so you were making saddles. Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. I'm interested in that.
No, basically when I was maybe 11 years old, that's when my mom, he said, well, you know, it's time for you to get a job. And, of course, you know, I saw the need, the financial struggle at my house. And say, yeah, let's do it. So she got me a job with some neighbors that make saddles. And they said to her, hey, you know, He's going to run the errands, but at the same time, you know, I'm going to teach him how to make saddles. So I was running the errands of the saddle shop, but at the same time, I was learning how to make a saddle. When I finally learned how to make a saddle, that's when I decided to go back to school. And knowing that I cannot quit that job, I was just going to school and making saddles. I did that for 5 years until I graduated from high school. And that's how I could finish my high school, making saddles, brother.
All right, so I'm curious now, brother. See, you know what I mean? Now, what is the process? Now, what did you have to do to make saddles? What's that process all about? So
basically, when you're going to make a saddle, everything is about the leather, you know?
Right.
The type of leather that you're going to make a saddle with. And also it has to do with techniques. The more time that you spend making saddles, the quicker that you're going to become. And let's say that you might make a little more money here and there. But it's a very physical labor job. It's a hard job.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it sounds a little tricky, brother.
Working under the sun, under the rain, bro. And praying that the saddle shop, the shop owner will sell a saddle for you to get paid.
Okay, so you had to make one saddle to get paid. You had to make the whole thing, so it wasn't like a process.
I used to make when I was working part time, 3 saddles. When I was working full time, 6 saddles.
And that's in the day? In a day?
A week.
A week, okay. A week.
Yeah, a week, yes.
Okay, a week.
So,
gotcha.
Yeah, and then basically, you know, we used to work from, the saddle shop was open from Monday to Saturday. Saturday was the payday, but to me, in order to finish my saddles on Saturday, I have to go and work on Sundays. And because when I was in school, we had projects and homeworks and stuff like that, so my classmate, whoever wanted me to have them in my project, well, I was asking them to come and help me at the saddle shop. So everybody was working for me to finish work early, you know?
Oh, man, I don't know if that paid a lot of money or... Did that?
it was little money, man.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, brother. You ain't make a whole lot of money. Okay, yeah. So now you're doing that and going to school. Okay, mm-hmm. So now I'm thinking, I don't know if you like this job, but you were thinking, I need to go to school. I can't be doing this all my life, bro. Like,
That's right.
I gotta get the hell out of here.
Yeah, and that's how the whole thing started, because when I start to learn how to make saddles, I decided not to go back to school. I want to be a saddle maker, you know. I said to myself, I want to make money. Let's see, you know, how many saddles I can make a week. But then I realized, you know, I didn't want to spend my whole life making saddles. So I dropped out of school for 2 years. And when I decided to go back to school, it was for good. Not to go and joke around, you know, fuck around in school, you know. I was attending to a public high school. But to me, I was determined enough to finish school, graduate, and get good grades. And hopefully a scholarship will be there, you know. But, you know, life is about opportunities. Every opportunity brings a sacrifice. And that was the sacrifice that I did while I was attending to high school. It was from 1999 to 2003. That was the year when I graduated from high school in Esteli, Nicaragua.
Okay, so you graduate high school. Now what do you do?
Then after that, Kevin, they gave me... I found out about this scholarship program. It was a full scholarship paid by the United States government throughout Georgetown University. So 300 students applied for the program, and only 1, 2, or 3 students get the opportunity and the major that they select. And the major that I selected, which was international commerce, 300 students around the country applied for the opportunity, and only 2 received the scholarship. And I was one of them in 2004, because I applied in 2003, and right around August, September 2003, and then I found out I was going to the United States by July next year. So it takes a long year for everybody to, you know, you submit your form where they ask you a bunch of questions, and then after that they call you for to an interview, then another interview, then you go to seminars, and then right at the end, maybe 2 weeks before you depart from your country to the United States, that's when they know, that's when they tell you, hey, your student visa has been approved, and now you're going to this college. So the college that the program selected for me, it was in the Quad Cities in Iowa.
Iowa.
So I was doing in Iowa for 2 years.
Whoa. I'm sorry, hold on. You said Iowa? You went from Esteli to Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And not knowing where Iowa was, because back in those years, I mean, the internet nowadays is everywhere. But back in those days, Kevin, you know the United States through sports, through movies, maybe MTV, you know, music videos and stuff like that. You kind of get the hints of what the United States looked like. When I got to Iowa, it was, you know, a Midwest city. Great people, man. Very, very kind, friendly people.
Hey, Pedro, I'm gonna tell you a secret, though. I'm gonna stop you right there. I'm gonna tell you a secret about the people who live in the United States. They don't even know where Iowa is at. They don't even know. So don't feel bad. The people who live here don't know where Iowa is at. So don't even worry about that.
Tell me about it. That was, you know, to me, I would say that a lot of people say culture shock, but to me it was like embracing the opportunity and adapting myself to the new thing, which was, you know, learning the culture. My number one priority was the language, learning the English. I was still working on my English, but I was taking ESL classes. In the afternoon, I was taking classes with a translator, with all the classes that have to do with the major that I pick. So long story short, 2 years after, I graduated, went back to Nicaragua. A lot of students from back in Iowa, when I was 10, before I finished school, they said to me, hey, you don't need to go to Nicaragua, man. You can stay right here with us. You know, you can work for my dad. He have a job for you. But I knew if I wouldn't do it, I would break the law to overstay my student visa. And I really want to find out what God in life had for me when I went back to Nicaragua. That's what I did. I was following my gut, bro.
Like I said,
something is gonna happen. I said,
listen, brother, like I said, I don't know if folks caught that, but out of 300 kids, only two got picked, and you was one of those two. That is amazing, brother.
I was one of those two. I always say God is good, and it's because God has been very good to me, you know?
Absolutely.
But at the same
time,
you know, opportunity comes to your table, Kevin. And it's up to you what you're going to do with it.
That's true.
Some people don't see the potential of the opportunity. Other people see the potential of the opportunity and the sacrifice of the opportunity. And people just don't quit right at the very beginning. They said, I'm not going to do it. That's too much. Other people say, well, this is the only opportunity that I got. This is the sacrifice that I have to play. But, you know, fuck it. I'm going to run with it as far as I can.
Boom.
And that's what it is when it comes to life. You know, nothing comes easy.
No, brother, like I said.
And me being those 2 years in Iowa, you've been far away from my family, you know, far away from everybody that I know, far away from the culture and everything. It was hard, but, you know, the most powerful thing that any human being can have is the power to adapt to the new normal.
Say it again, mm-hmm. brother. The power to adapt. That's the Marine Corps. Adapt and overcome. That's the Marine Corps.
That's right.
One of their little genres there. But, yo, okay, so now you, Iowa, bro. Let's not even go there. But, okay. So you go back home to Esteli. Now, how long do you stay back home in Esteli before you come back again?
Oh, when I went back, that was in August 2006. Right around that time, I went to every single cigar factory in town looking for a job. I was ready, you know, with my resume and the whole 9 yards. And nobody had nothing for me. I went to every single cigar factory. You know, they didn't have nothing, not a position for me, which it was okay. You know, I knew that it was nothing. Coming back to Nicaragua, nobody would be waiting for me with a job. So when I went to Drew State, they didn't have nothing. I went to the interview, they didn't have nothing, but they said, hey, if you want to work, come tomorrow at 7 a.m., which is the time that everybody gets into work in a cigar factory. So I was working at Drew State factory from 7 to 5, you know, like a normal schedule. And the first, I would say, few months, it was trying to find something to do and helping the factory in whatever they asked me to help. And at the same time, it was, for me, learning in different departments. Learning what's going on the production floor, learning what's going on in the quality control department, learning what's going on in the faction department, learning what's going on in the tobacco warehouse, learning what's going on in the veining grapher area. And when I have the opportunity, when they have the opportunity for me to translate to them, especially when they had meetings in Nicaragua, I was translated to the CFO, to the CEO of the company, to the people in the factory. So I had the opportunity to learn how the factory operates. At the level at that time, what Drew State was, a small little cigar factory. And then the opportunity started to come when they gave me more opportunity to be more involved in operation, being the operation manager assistant. I did that for a year at Drew State. The same time, I was running the local tours for visitors coming from other countries, you know, and local visitors too at the factory. So it was good. It was a good sense for me to get an experience how to give a tour and to express the knowledge of tobacco to the people that were coming to the factory in a language that they can easily understand.
Did you ever do any rolling? Did you ever try your hand at that?
No, I do know the techniques. I will be lying to you, Kevin, if I tell you that I'm the best roller at Drew State. I am not. The only person that can claim that are the people that makes the high-end quality cigar that we make. And those are the guys that they make cigars day in and day out. Those are the best.
Interesting.
But I do know, I know how to pass a grapper. I do know how to bunch a cigar. Because in Nicaragua, you got people that bunch, which are most of the cases are males. And you got rollers that most of the cases are females.
Any particular reason why that is?
It is because ladies are more detail-oriented. Remember this, when you are passing the grapper of the cigar, you are creating the face of that cigar. The bonchero, on the other hand, they put together the tobacco leaf, and then after that, they have to press down those cigars that are put in plastic mold, so they have to press them down in a press machine. And I would say in that particular case, you need to have, because of the amount of force that you implement into the press machine, most of the cases are done by men.
Interesting. Okay, brother. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you're doing all that. When is this big role? When does it happen for you at Drew State? When did the moment say, oh, damn, I'm about to make another move here, and this move may be major? a major
that
move.
That one came around when we were about to start the construction of Cigar Safari, which is our tourism department. At that point, I have already worked helping them out, translating or helping with groups that were coming to Nicaragua. That's when Jonathan saw that I have potential, you know, running the Cigar Safari tours. And they said to me, hey, I want you to be the director of Cigar Safari. So I said, yeah, that would be nice. And then I start to work with all the tours that were coming to Nicaragua. At that time, Jonathan was giving the tours. They were all the executives giving the tours. One of those two executives, now they do own cigar companies. One of them is Steve Seca. He was the CEO of Drew State, so I learned about how he was giving the tour, talking about tobacco, talking about cigar, talking about brands. Also, I learned from a lot of stuff from Nicholas, talking about fermenting tobacco, broadleaf tobacco, you know, how the production floor runs and everything. And of course, you know, seeing the whole picture from Jonathan Drew, how the company started, where the company was heading. And then I was help doing that, running the tours in the operational side for maybe 3 years. Then the fourth year around, that's when Jonathan said to me, hey, I think that you are well more prepared for you to run the tours. So what you need to do is hire somebody that will help you to make sure that everything is running on point. That's when I brought another person from Esteli, and he was my assistant. So I was doing that, and everything was running good. And at that point, by 2011, Drew Estate was planning to expand Drew Estate brands to other countries outside of the United States. Jonathan, knowing my education background, he said to me, why don't you run the international sales? I didn't have no experience of selling cigars, so I said, hey, you know, I do know how to give a tour, but I do need some sort of training how to sell a cigar, you know, to somebody.
Right.
So they sent me to Iowa, to Miami to get a 2-week sales training. And that's what I did. At the end of the training, they asked me, hey, do a presentation. And at that point, you know, me knowing the technical knowledge of what's happening in the factory and then getting the right language about how to present or sell a cigar, it came out good, you know.
All right, so now then, I gotta ask this question, brother. Now, you said you sent you to a 2-week class in Miami on how to sell cigars. What was that class like? What do they teach you in class? What do they tell you?
Well, basically, I was training under the inside sales director. He was telling me how to pick up the phone, how to talk to the customer, how to talk about cigar, what is the difference between back in the time, Assis cigars, and let's say Chateau Real is not longer in the market. We discontinued that brand, but what's the difference between a grapper? What's the difference, you know, like selling points.
Gotcha.
Normal cigar smoker will kind of care about it, but don't give him too much information because people don't have the time to put it, you know.
So you need the bullet points. Like that's the good stuff.
Right. It's like reading your crowd, reading your audience, you know.
Gotcha.
Seeing how much you want to go deep into knowledge or just keep it in the surface, you know.
Interesting, brother. That's okay. So you're selling. Okay, you said you were selling school. So you was like
like being a closer. You know, everybody can sell, but at the end of the day, few people close the deals. You know.
Okay, you was a closer. You was the man. They're like, so it was like we're going to the car dealership, and then you got to talk to the manager after you sit there
you
for 6 hours.
Somebody.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, how much you want to pay for this car?
For you, for all your family. You know.
All right, so I ask this question because people want to know. I hear Drew. Yes. I hear Jonathan is a hip hop head, man. So how is it working for Jonathan, brother?
Is he cool?
He seems like he's a cool cat. He's like a laid back dude. Like, yeah, what's up?
Yeah, no, he's cool, man. I mean, working for Jonathan was the best thing that ever happened to me. All the opportunity that I've been telling you so far have been because of him. Like seeing who has what it takes to run that department. And it has been a bless. I mean, before Drew Estate moved me from Nicaragua to work over here, I was Jonathan's assistant. And Jonathan is a person that does and stops working. He works 7 days a week. He doesn't have a time when he's going to start. What time he start working, what time he's going to stop working. So seeing how he sees the industry, the vision that he has for the company, you know, and how he has created all those different brands. It has been a blessed being part of that because everything that I have learned in school is not even compared to what I have learned at Drew Estate.
Now, see, I know Jonathan. I think he comes from humble beginnings because, again, from up New York.
From Brooklyn, you know, start Drew Estate from scratch. Drew Estate started off with a little kiosk pushing car at the World Trade Center. And he was selling everybody's brands. And then after that, you know, he started like a broker area for New York and New Jersey and other states too. And then by mid-90, he decided to go to Nicaragua and see if he can make this little private label brand that he had in New York. Somebody from the Dominican Republic was making that cigar for him in New York City. And then for him to upscale the production, he needs to move to where the factories are, which in that case, people heard about Nicaragua not as the end consumer, not what the end consumer knows nowadays. People heard about Nicaragua, but what people want to read, it was that it was a conflict country with a lot of political and even civil war that took place in the 80s. So when Jonathan moved in the 90s, he was going to the place that people only heard about it, you know?
Nice. And
people didn't want to live there because they didn't have the condition for anybody that have a comfortable life here in the United States want to live in a third world country. Third world country is about, you know, you got water today, you don't have water tomorrow. You got electricity for a few hours during the day, you got no electricity for the rest of the day. You know, a situation like that.
Wow.
But Jonathan understanding the potential of tobacco and the potential of those cigar manufacturers, that's when he decided to stick around. He started, at that point, La Vieja Habana was a brand that was already handmade in New York, but Jonathan brought La Vieja Habana blend, and the cigar was made in Nicaragua in somebody's factory. Turns out that nowadays that factory is Nick Perdomo factory. But back in that time, it was Nick Perdomo Sr., the person that was making a cigar for John.
Okay.
And Nick Perdomo Sr., rest in peace, you know. His company was growing. He was making a lot of private label for other companies. He was building his brand portfolio as well. So when Jonathan saw the opportunity for him to have his own little cigar factory, I would call it a cigar factory, but it was a packaging department or a packaging cigar factory.
Okay.
So Nick Perdomo was making the cigar for him. Those cigars were being transported from his factory to a little house in downtown Esteli where Jonathan was renting out, and he started his operation with six people from Esteli. And that was the birthplace of Drew Estate.
Wow, man. That's what I said. People just don't know, brother. Just like I said, you never know, man.
Yeah. Then by 1999, Drew Estate launched Acid Cigars. And Acid Cigars start to sell here and there, start to take off, and start to get very popular. When I joined Drew Estate, it was in 2006. At that point, we were renting out 11 different houses to operate as a cigar factory. So we have Drew Estate all over the city. In a house, we have the production floor, right in the same house, and the garage, it was the packaging department. Right in the same house, in the dining room, it was the accounting department. I'm talking about guys, two, three desks, two computers, and let's continue with the operation. At that point, Drew Estate was growing and growing and growing and growing. So when they decide to buy this piece of land in this west side of the city, that's when they start to build this building. And a lot of people from the community, they thought that it was like a cathedral church because it was a humongous infrastructure. Then people find out that it was a Drew Estate factory. Even the local cigar makers, they say, hey, Jonathan, he's losing his mind. He's putting so much money building that humongous infrastructure. Nobody's coming here to see that operation. What people didn't know was that Jonathan, his idea was to bring end consumers and retailers to have a tour at Drew Estate Factory with Cigar Safari. Through Cigar Safari, I'm sorry. And then, long story short, 2007, we moved to the new facility. By 2008, we started with the tours. I started running all the tours. I started to meet and spend time with retailers, which was the 4 days that they were in Nicaragua. I got the opportunity to know them. They had the opportunity to see me working and see, you know, how I take care of everything that was happening during the Cigar Safari tour. So then by 2011, I had the opportunity to start with the international sales department. Me, only me.
Only you.
So it was only me. So I was managing all, not all, because I was opening up accounts in different countries. I did that for 3 years. In 3 years, I opened 9 countries. So pretty much it's about dealing with one distributor per country. And then Drew State was sending me to Germany. They have this trade show that is called Intertabak. So I was attending them every year, once a year. And that's when we met with distributors and stuff like that. By 2013, Drew State moved me from Nicaragua. They gave me the opportunity to come and work for them full-time here in the United States. And at that point, I was feeling good in the factory, you know. I have already accomplished a position where I say, hey, you know, I'm good right here. But when that opportunity came to my table, I say, let's do it. Because I'm not the kind of person that like to find myself in a comfort zone. I always strive to what is next. And what is the next thing to go after, you know.
Go get it, brother.
So when I got the opportunity to come here, I was still running the tour for 6 months of the year in Nicaragua. And the other 6 months of the year, I was traveling all around the country doing cigar events. By 2015, they asked me to the person that I hired early on to train him more into how to give the tours and everything, because the company was needing me to do more tour, more events here in the United States. By 2015, that's what I did. And, you know, being here since then, just traveling around. By 2016, at that point, Drew State had sponsored my green card to get my green card to live here, you know, legally.
Yes.
Because when I came here, it was with a work visa. But the second step was for Drew State to sponsor my green card, that's something that barely happened, Kevin. Most of the time when you get a green card is when you get married with somebody from the United States, or when your parents that are American citizens, they request you from another country to come and live over here. But you barely see companies, especially cigar companies, that bring people from other countries to work for them over here. You only see those scenarios in public trade companies, you know, like technology companies, like maybe, of course, you know, like Apple, Microsoft, companies that are...
Yeah, the big tech companies. Big tech companies. Making big billions of bucks.
Right. And because, you know, when a company sponsors your green card, they have to open the books to Uncle Sam. They have to see if your company is legit. They have to see all the moves that you do. They have to see everything for them to approve to bring somebody. So at that point on, that tells you where Drew State values and principles came from. There is no shortcut.
No, and you apply. And you applied for that one, 2016?
Mm-hmm.
So it took that many...
By 2016?
Yeah,
yeah,
so
I got
took,
the
okay,
green card.
And you just got your citizenship here in 2022.
Yes, in 2022, because you have to wait 5 years. During those 5 years, you know, you have to be a role model as a citizen, you know. And you know, my thing coming here was work, made the best out of it, helped my family back home, because my dad and my mom, they're still in Nicaragua. My siblings are still in Nicaragua. I got a sister that she lives in Charlotte. She got married with somebody, then that person requests her to come and live in the United States. That's where she's living nowadays. But me, I've been solo my whole life and just making and doing my best, you know.
Okay, so you saying you ain't got no little shorty? No wifey, mm-hmm. No what?
No wife, no kids, buddy.
Oh man, you might be a smart man, brother. You might be a smart man with that.
Right
now.
You know, I will tell you like this. When I have the opportunity to give advice to young cats, I always say this. Remember what is important to you. What is important to you right now is not going to be important in the next 5 years. You have to see the entire picture. In order for you to kind of feel yourself that you have done something in life, you have to accomplish all your wildest dreams. You don't have to be what if. What if I didn't get married and I wouldn't pursue that career, and I might be over here. That it doesn't exist, bro, because time doesn't wait, and time doesn't forgive, you know? So you have to really accomplish all your dreams that you have in your heart and in your mind. And eventually, along the road, you are going to meet somebody that will be your better half. It's like Dave Chappelle said, you know, always save the good one to the last.
Listen to Pedro here philosophizing. Pedro here philosophizing.
Really?
Hello, I didn't know you had that in you, Pedro. Listen to you, brother.
And I will tell you like this. When people get married very young, there is so much that they have to do in order to make that relationship work. So it's very hard to be very good at your professional job or your career or the business that you want to build, and at the same time being a family man. It's very tough. It's almost impossible to be good at both. If you are good at one, you are going to fail in the other one, or vice versa, you know?
Listen, man, you're a little wise beyond your years, man. How old are you again, man? You're talking like you're like 90 years old. You're talking like a real wise man here, brother. You're talking some real philosophy.
I'm 37, man, but you know what? All that stuff that I'm sharing with you, Kevin, are the things that I have learned in life. Lessons that I learned working in the saddle shop with guys that were 3 times my age. And I was hearing them, you know, complaining here, complaining there. I knew when I was 12 how expensive kids are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they are expensive, bro, when somehow, you know, things doesn't work in the relationship. And then, you know, the kids start to grow in 2 different houses, you know, and the whole thing becomes a nightmare. Not just for the parents, but for the kids, you know. I grew up with a single mother, and it was no dad around. My dad was not even in the picture. Until later on in life, was my dad came to my life, and you know, thank God nowadays he doesn't drink no more. And you know, I saw the mistake that he made.
Okay, so how's that relationship? You got a good relationship.
It's
good,
great, bro. Solid like a rock.
Good.
Because when I was studying here, I got a call from my dad. I haven't heard from him for maybe 8 years, and he called me out of the blue. Say, hey, how you doing, pal? Hey, this is your dad, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm sober now, and I just want to get in touch with you and see if I can help you with anything. I said, hey, you know, at that point, where I had like a resentment in my heart, and I was the goddamn fucking student. I was the best in my class, but I had the resentment in my heart, you know?
Yes.
So for me to make peace, it's about forgiving the person that hurt you the most. And the person that shouldn't be with you, he wasn't there, but I said, fuck it, man. This was the life that God gave it to me. I have to make the best out of it.
No doubt,
so
man.
Now, man, we have a good relationship with my dad. And, you know, we talk, he gives me advice, you know. And it's awesome, man. It's a great thing to have a good relationship with your folks.
No, that's very
because
true.
Because it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you have. If you don't have nobody to share with, Kevin, you are an empty soul.
I'm telling you, preaching here today, brother. I think we're going to have to put some church music on here, brother, because you're doing some preaching here today.
It is like that. And how I learned all those lessons, I was in my 20s when I was attending to all my friends' weddings. I was like, no, bro, this stuff is way too big for me. I'm just going to stick around, just working. At the time, I didn't have no time working at real estate. I was working from Sunday to Sunday. I was doing all the tours. That was one group coming on Sunday. That group was doing on Wednesday. I was dropping off that group at the airport. The same day, after 1 hour, maybe hour and a half, maybe 2 hours sometimes, which was the best. I can take a little break. The other group comes around. I was like, welcome to Nicaragua. Like nothing happened. And I was doing that for 6 months in the road. No break.
Now, you know folks are listening to this, Pedro, and saying right now, oh, wait a minute. Do they still give out tours? Are y'all still doing tours?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
Well, because of COVID, we stopped those tours. But we are planning to open them back. We are just planning, you know, we're in the talk. Those are the decisions that they have to be making the executive level. But those are things that they are considering to open Cigar Safari Tours back again next year.
Next year. Okay, so through 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha, gotcha. So, because you know folks are listening, because that's all they think about is what they're going to do. Oh, man, I want to go on a tour. So how would one even find out about that tour? And what would how would they book themselves? Would they have to go to the website or something?
Yes. So basically what we do, we have a website that is called drewestate.com. Over there, you subscribe, your email address. Every week we send an email to let everybody know what's going on with Drew Estate, things that we are working on, things that are going to be ready for the future. So over there, that's when we let everybody know about Cigar Safari. But nowadays, because Cigar Safari is not it's not on yet, that's when we let everybody know about these multi-mega events that are called Barn Smokers.
Okay. Now, is there a fee for that? They got to pay for that, or how does that work?
Yeah, so when it comes to the Barn Smoker, let's talk about Cigar Safari, and then we talk about the Barn Smoker.
Yeah, so
when it comes to Cigar Safari, it's 4 days, 3 nights, all inclusive. Food, transportation, beverage, the tour of the factory, the estate, and everything. The cigar that you're going to smoke, and the whole 9 yards. And then the only thing that people have to cover is the airfare from wherever they are flying from. And the cost of the package is, it was back in that time, it was $650.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. Yep. Nice. Okay. So now let's move to the Barn Smoker, because now I know that's still going on. That's actually happening.
Yes.
You just had one in Florida.
Two weeks ago. The one in Florida was in Clearmont, Florida. There is another one that is about to happen in Pennsylvania. Another one that is going to happen in Connecticut, another one that is going to happen in Kentucky, another one that is going to happen in Dallas. All that information, you can find it at drewestate.com, or you can go to Google and type barnsmoker.com, the Barn Smoker by Drew Estate.
Okay.
On Google, and then it's gonna bring you to the page where you can get the ticket. There are different tiers when it comes to the ticket. VIP, where we're going to celebrate the first night, which is going to be a beautiful dinner, great dinner, amazing food, great spirits, beverage, amazing cigars, collection cigars from Drew Estate. Cool swag. We're talking about the VIP ticket, and they also give you the VIP box and swag for the D25, which was the event that we couldn't celebrate last year. And then you got the general admission, which is for the event that takes place in all those locations that I just mentioned to you, with the exception of Dallas, but Kentucky, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania, all those mega events takes place in a tobacco farm where you're going to meet close to 1,200 people that comes from one day event.
Nice. Now, are you going to be at those spots? Are you going to be at the Barn Smokers, each one of those?
I'm going to be in every one of them. Because
that's my man.
Besides being the MC when it comes to those events, me and my man Jack Hager is our co-host when we do the Freestyle Life. So me and Jack, we are the MC. And right when the tobacco presentation starts, I give the presentation how they grow tobacco in those particular places. Me and the person that runs the farms, which in this case is our family-owned business. Family that they have been growing tobacco for almost 100 years. You're talking about third generation, fourth generation. So we gave a presentation, what's happening in the cure barns, what's happening in the tobacco field, what happened in the blending section. At the blending section, we have Willie Herrera, who is our master blender.
Yeah.
At the Barn Smoker, at the Cure Barn, we have Jonathan Drew, the co-founder of Drew Estate. And right in the tobacco field presentation, you got myself and the person that is going to be helping me giving the presentation to hundreds of people one at a time. So we break down the groups. One goes to that station, another group goes to another station, another group comes to my station. And then we rotate them every 45 minutes. So you got a beautiful, beautiful first-hand experience what's going on in a tobacco farm.
Speaking of what's going on, I see you looking nice and smooth in the videos out here now with the new Nicarustica. I said, damn, look at Pedro looking all smooth. I said, oh, yeah, from Esteli, Nicarustica. So let's talk about that new cigar, brother. What's going on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. With Nicarustica, we released that cigar last week. We did, well, actually 2 weeks ago during the Freestyle Live. Basically, one thing that nowadays we are doing, Kevin, we are doing this Freestyle Live show that happens live on Facebook, where we unveil the mystery cigar. And people will be like, what have to do the mystery cigar with Nicarustica? Well, when the blend is ready to go, this time we did 10,000 Freestyle Life packs. In every pack, it brings three cigars, one of every size, and then it brings a finger case, travel case, humidor.
Yeah, I saw all that, man. I was upset, man, because nobody had none around here.
A lighter, and then the retailers sell those to the end consumers. Everybody that gets those, it brings a badge and a number that you have to register the number in order for your number to run for the grand prize that we give away the day of the show. Last Freestyle Live, we gave away a Jeep 2020 of this year, 2022.
Nice, I saw that.
Beautiful Jeep.
Yeah, I saw that, bro.
And then the retailer that sold the pack, he gets something beautiful, a set of leather couch and stuff like that. And then we got second prize and third prize. So at the end of the day, you know, it's a platform that gives us the opportunity to bring the new cigar directly to the end consumers. So I did this marquee event on Friday in Maryland with the store that is called The Humidor. And it was a lot of people. Everybody comes and bought this cigar box, and everybody was embraced the brand very nice. The people that had the smoked that cigar during the Freestyle Light Show, they had a great time. They went to the event, they bought one or two boxes. And then from that point on, that's how we are releasing new cigars. So, but come back to Nicarustica. Nicarustica is the extension of the original Nicarustica, which was the broadleaf version, which was the Maduro version. Yeah. Nicarustica, we use a Habano wrapper. The fillers are from Nicaragua. The cigar is medium plus. The cigar is a cigar that is packed with tons of flavors, but it has that rustic taste. Close to Nicarustica, but not quite, because Nicarustica, the tobacco is very different, but the flavor profile is kind of similar. It's a very distinguished Habano cigar. And the price point is really good, because when it comes to the real estate, we just don't make cigars that are, you know, high-end brands. We make cigars for everybody.
Right, the working person, not the $25, the $27, $30 cigars. Yeah, that's not Smoke World prices. Right. See, we don't spend a whole lot of money at Smoke World. Don't tell nobody about Pedro.
$6, $7, $8, you know, depending where you're buying those cigars, which state, because every state is different when it comes to the tax. But that's how we do a Drew Estate. Now, so that's the new cigar that is going to be available to everybody.
Did you have a hand in this cigar? Because you was looking real smooth in the videos, like, you know, like you made that cigar. I said, damn, did Pedro make this cigar?
No, the closest that I was to that particular project was when the factory sent me prototype blends for me to smoke. But the person that put the hands in and hands out was Willie Herrera, our master blender.
Oh, Willie, okay.
And, of course, the team that we have at the Real Estate Fight.
Nice. Okay, so are they out in stores yet or not yet?
Right now it's only available at the Humidor, but right around June it's going to be available to all across the country.
Okay, in June. Good stuff, brother. Yes. Good stuff, June. All right there, brother. Now, listen, brother. I've been beating your ear up a little bit. So now, before we wrap up, what is it that you want the folks to know about Drew Estates? You got some events coming up. You got the Barn Smoke coming up. I guess, folks, if you ain't got your tickets now, they're probably sold out. But I guess you can check. You can check.
Yeah, don't lose nothing by checking, you know?
No, don't lose nothing by checking. But what would you want to leave the people with, you know, so we can sound smart? And when we go to the cigar lounge, we want to be able to sound smart and be able to tell our buddies.
Smart.
Yeah, we want to sound like you know what we're talking about. So what can you leave us with, Pedro, that we can sound smart when we go to the lounge, that we can say we know something but we really don't? What can you tell us,
Well, you know, before I say anything, I just want to reach out to your audience and say thank you so very much for giving me the opportunity to be in your show, Smoke War Podcast.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
This is where everything takes place, man. If you want to know what's going on in the industry, you want to follow my man, Cap. He's going to let you know everything about it. Plus, the last time that I was talking to Cap, I was telling him, hey, well, you know, you should add a little comedy to your show, to your podcast show.
Be like Dave Chappelle.
People are going to love it. Because every day, at the end of the day, you know, there's so many shows up there. But one important thing about any show is the authenticity. And saying authenticity, how we can apply that word to Drew Estate. Drew Estate is an authentic cigar company. Everything that we do at Drew Estate, everything has a purpose. Everything has a goal. We don't make cigar just for the sake to have a new cigar. Every cigar has a little micro word in the market. It has a beautiful niche. From the cigar that we make, infused cigar like acid cigars, non-traditional cigar like Deadwood, traditional cigar like Liga Privada, all the way to Nica Rustica, Herrera Esteli, Undercrowns, you know, all of those cigars, factory smokes, you know, a very nice cigar for the price point. Everything has to have a purpose, and everything that we do at Drew Estate, we are always thinking ahead. The more ahead that we are thinking, the better the price is going to come up. But just to give you a heads up, we are working on different products that we are going to release maybe in the next 2 years or 3 years. That's how far we have to think at the scale of Drew Estate. How the company came to be to all the support for everybody out there. Everybody that has been buying one cigar at a time, those are the people that have been building Drew Estate. Drew Estate, a lot of people see Drew Estate as a big company. I still see Drew Estate as a small company. Because when you think too big, you lose sense of reality and you lose what's going on in the cigar community, you know? So for all of us, and that includes Jonathan Drew, he sees Drew Estate as a company that has created a movement within the cigar industry in the last 26 years. And it is a company that a lot of people appreciate, and that is therefore that we are so grateful for all the support. You know, everybody that comes to the event, everybody that we meet. I mean, how we met Kev? We were visiting this cigar store in Delaware.
Yeah.
And I was with Kevin.
Randy, I said, hey, man, I know you, man. You're a famous guy.
Event, you know, you came to the event, and then we shot, you know, you were telling me about your podcast show, and I was, hey, you know, it would be nice if I have the opportunity to be in your show, which for me, it is an honor to be in your show, brother.
Listen,
I was thinking about this, you know, like, nowadays, I'm doing a lot of events. That means I travel everywhere.
Yeah, you're
but when
all
I have
place.
The opportunity to do this show is good because, you know, a lot of people see Drew Estate in the shelf, but every brand has a story. Every company has a story from where the company starts to where the company is. And every company, you have a lot of people that work behind the curtains. Me, thank God I got the honor to have this role at the company that I told to everybody as the factory spokesperson. But to me, it will be a role that, you know, I take it very seriously because I'm coming from Esteli. There is a lot of people from Esteli that would love to be in my shoes. And therefore, I always strive to do better every time that I can. So when it comes to Drew Estate, everybody, one thing for sure, remember this. The birthplace of cigars.
Yeah.
Or the rebirth of cigars.
You are the man. Listen, folks, you heard Pedro. He's a philosopher. Now, if you didn't know that, now you know that. The man is wise beyond his years. So listen, Pedro, how can they follow you, man? People want to know, like, yo, I want to follow Pedro, man, on the social media. Yes. Give me your social media, brother.
Well, when it comes to social media, Drew State Pedro, easy breezy. Facebook is Pedro Gomez Rodriguez, because Facebook found out a couple years ago that I use my personal Facebook to promote Drew State. Of course, you know, I live, breathe, and die Drew State. So everything about my thing, social media, everything is about events, everything is about new cigars, everything is about related to tobacco and cigars, you know. But yes, Instagram, Drew State Pedro. Now, when it comes to Drew State company, follow Drew State on Instagram. You will see easy breezy. There is thousands of followers that follow Drew State, which is something that I want to take the opportunity to thank you guys, because, I mean, now in this day and age, a lot of things happen and a lot of people find out through social media, you know.
Yeah, social media. Yeah, it's a lot of things.
Media out there, you know, like your show, cigar magazines, you know, bloggers, YouTubers. But at the end of the day, you know, if you heard from Drew State, you know what's going on.
Absolutely. Right from the horse's mouth, as they say, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, brother, I appreciate you being a guest on Smoke World. Appreciate you, brother.
Right.
You the man, brother. Pedro in the building, brother. Thank you for being a guest, man. You were the man. You broke it down. They ain't paying attention. They wasn't paying attention, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Truly appreciate it, man. I wish you all the best, hey?
But there you have it, folks. Another episode of Smoke World in the books. You can follow me on Instagram at Smoke World Podcast. Email stone@smokeworldpodcast.com. And the website, folks, smokeworldpodcast.com. Thanks to Pedro. Big ups to him. He shared the whole lot going on right there. His personal story. George States, the rebirth of cigars. What can I say? Folks, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. And guess what? We will check you out on the other side. Peace.